Welcome. You are listening to Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in. This is Henrik Palmgren, and we are coming to you from Sweden in Scandinavia. Our website is redicecreations.com. We are here twice a week, exploring the world of the known and the worlds of the unknown. At our website, you can find our radio archive, forums, film, and a frequently updated news section, all for your consideration. And also don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. That's a good way to keep up with the updates over at Red Ice. Okay, today we have two guests with us on the program. They've been on, both of them, before, but solo. So finally we have the pleasure of having them both on. Ben Farrell from Battling the Behemoth is with us. Ben-Farrell.blogspot is his main blog. We also have Jake Kutzi from The Brave New World Order joining us. TheBraveNewWorldOrder.blogspot.com is the address to Jake's main blog. And both of these gentlemen, as you know, do fantastic work over at their respective blogs, inspiring work that helps us to look with all three of our eyes on events, life, art, and entertainment. And Jake, we're over in the UK at the end, I guess, of the summer in 07, and we have planned for a long time to do a program together and have both of them on, but that hasn't transpired until now, so finally, but it's rather late than never, so to speak, so it's a pleasure to have them both on here today. So let's say hi, I guess, first to Ben Farrell here. Welcome to the program, Ben. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much, Henrik. Lovely to be here, as always.
Excellent, thank you. And on the other side of the pond, we have Jake Kotze. Howdy, Jake. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Henrik. Hi, Ben. It's great to be here.
Excellent.
Yeah, hi, Jake.
Thanks.
Hi.
You know, I thought we could begin here, guys, talk a little bit about the time that you spent together over in the UK. I know that you mainly together went out and did some crop circle exploration and went around the UK. I also know that Jake went down to a pretty interesting place called Project Eden that we could talk a little bit later more about, perhaps. And I know that Jake also was at the Grand Lodge over at Queen Street in England or in London. But I guess we could begin to talk about the time that we spent together. Basically, you know, going over and seeing some of the crop circles. I don't know if you guys think that this is something that is, you know, have connected more with your work or not. But I mean, how was the time over there, guys, to spend it? I don't know if either one wants to pick up on that.
Well, I personally thought it was a wonderful opportunity, and Ben was very, very gracious in inviting me over. And I would never have been able to explore them on myself. You really need to know the roads, and it's like such an intricate system of roads, and just to have somebody to actually who knows the area to show you around, and also who knows the people and the sites. That was really exciting. And you know, there were other things apart from the crop circle that's interesting about the area, just the sacred sites, everything concentrated in Wiltshire. It's really amazing and was quite the opportunity. I felt very lucky and privileged.
Ben, was it you you know the territory down there, I guess? Did you guys drive around in a car for a few days, or what did you do?
Yeah, we were driving around in my transit van, or actually not a transit van, it's a sort of minivan, for about 4 days, covering a lot of miles in that time. And of course, obviously, you know, being sort of together so intensely, you know, raises a few challenges in its own right, which are interesting to work through. And, you know, as I've said to Jake several times, I've said to pretty much everybody who knows me, you know, sort of being with me for 4 days in there isn't always very easy, Henrik.
Okay.
Sure, there were definitely challenges, but wow, it was such an opportunity. The when I left from Canada to go to England to see the crop circles, I was hoping that I would be able to see, you know, two or three fully formed formations if I was lucky to see a fresh one. And in the end, we saw about 10 formations, and one that was very fresh, new one at Sugar Hill that was beautiful, new formation, and we got to see the giant 777 ohm formation. So I was super lucky, and I had no concept at the time for, you know, how long does a circle stay on the ground, you know, how much damage can it take? So how long can you actually view them for? And all these questions were well answered, and it was wonderful.
So did you guys keep an eye, like, on the web, and just as soon as something came up, you went over there, or did you just kind of drive around and hope to actually see something?
Well, I think we did a bit of both, and there was this wonderful spot where you could also, once you're in the fields, you could go to the Silent Circle Cafe, and they had a computer there and all the croppies hanging out, checking out the newest circles, hoping that maybe if you were really lucky, one had happened the previous evening that wasn't even on the net yet, and you could be in there beforehand, which is another thing that we were very privileged to have seen. We were at a circle that wasn't even on the net yet. There was one that happened at the Pusey White Horse.
Yes.
And we managed to show up there. It wasn't even on the net yet, and the police were keeping people from going into the circle. So that was a very exciting one to be part of,
Nice. I did want to ask you this, Jake, because I know that you went to the place called Project Eden. This is down in Cornwall, I guess, a kind of garden of as you said, geodesic domes, basically. I guess, is it like plants from all over the world down there, or what's it like?
That's right. It's this large, you know, sort of educational facility, and just this beautiful, like, setup with all these giant geodesic domes. I think they're some of the biggest geodesic domes in the world, if not the biggest ones. And inside they have, as you said, plants from all over the world, and giant plants, and, you know, like, it just blows your mind. But what was really appealing to me about it is I'm fascinated by geodesic domes, my work, and they sort of keep popping up synchronistically when I research certain topics. The first one that comes to mind is a geodesic in the film The Silent Running that you sort of view, that you see Saturn through, and it forms a hexagon over Saturn. And for that reason, I was really interested in going to these geodesic domes. And also, it was opened officially in 2001 on my birthday. So I thought the synchronicity of having it opening on the 17th of March, St. Patrick's Day, on my birthday, on this pivotal date for me, you know, the 2001 mega ritual kind of event thing, just sort of attracted me. And there were these giant bee sculptures and sculptures of all sorts of pagan gods there. It was a really exciting venue to be part of, really. It's fascinating.
Nice. Have you ever been there, Ben?
Not to the Eden Project, no. But, you know, obviously Cornwall I have spent some time in. It's an extremely interesting sort of sacred county in Albion. Sort of very non-English, shall we say.
You know, a little bit, this reminds me, when speaking about the Project Eden, kind of reminds me a little bit just about the... I don't know if you guys heard about the Doomsday Vault building right now, actually up in Svalbard. This is very close to the Arctic Circle. This is called the Global Seed Vault, and it's sponsored by the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation.
Really?
I think DuPont, Monsanto, and Syngenta are some of the, you know, giants working on this thing or sponsoring it. That seems to, you know, be very eager to control some of the crops of the world. But, you know, if nothing else, it kind of gives a hint, I guess, a little bit about the consensus insecurity that many seem to feel for the future. These companies and foundations should know, I guess. But I don't know if Project Eden is something quite as revealing as this, but maybe it's more of something in symbolic nature, to kind of an urge to return to the Garden of Eden. I don't know. Any thoughts on this, guys?
Yeah, well, I mean, the structure definitely seems like a bit of a, you know, an unconscious, perhaps ritualistic venue to sort of, you know, represent this Noah's Ark kind of environment, very much like the film as well, Silent Running, with all these plants together under these domes, and definitely, as you said, Garden of Eden. Garden of Eden-esque. I don't know if these things are conscious or unconscious. I suspect they're more unconscious, mm-hmm. personally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The reasons I'm asking here also is because I know that both of you guys kind of prominently are looking at different, you know, architectural features also, you know, everything from something as straightforward as a building to, you know, monuments, public art, landmarks, and things like this. I mean, for example, Jake, you've been looking at, you know, art in and around like the World Trade Center, and Ben, in one of your recent articles, you looked at the, for instance, the Woodstock Museum, or even more recently, I'm probably going to butcher this name here, but Saint Germain en Laye. You know what I mean? And
In France, yeah.
Exactly. And you know, if either one of you want to kind of pick up on this and talk a little bit about that, something that, you know, it could be something about the name in some instances that is of interest. In other cases, it's the placement or even the shape, sure. that reveals something about, you know, the connection or a symbol or a message, you know?
Yeah, sure. Well, if I can interject and say something on this one, I mean, you know, certainly I've learned a great deal from looking at Jake's work. He has, you know, inspired me and inspired a lot of people on the net. And so one of the things which I have certainly developed sort of since I've started researching this sort of field is this kind of intuitive sense for these sort of deeply talismanic sort of symbolic structures. And it's something now which I can just simply see. I can sense as soon as I see one of these things precisely who put them there and why. And you know, I think a lot of the time that this you know, sort of these structures are indeed conscious, you know, rather than sort of entirely unconscious. I think there is I think there's a great deal of conscious intent going on as well.
Mm-hmm. Jake, do you feel the same way?
Oh yeah, well I certainly believe that, you know, there are definitely people, you know, the architects who build these structures very often, you know, are connected to secret orders, secret societies, and are very, you know, aware of the symbolism they're using in these structures. But I also think that above and beyond that, and sometimes even apart from that, you have this more like the universal mind that just sort of, yep. works its way through.
Certainly.
Even the secret societies and,
oh, yes.
people like that. So I agree. I definitely agree. But I feel like people are looking for conspiracies and looking for a sort of, you know, a plot in these things, and it's there. I mean, there's no doubt it's there. But I feel above and beyond that, I'm more interested in the sort of the meta mind underneath, even working through forces like the New World Order and stuff like that. I see that only as part of it. Yeah,
Ben.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's when we start getting into this whole thing about mojo rising, about magic. You know, rather than, shall we say, a sort of conscious, exclusively conscious. Yes, for sure. Obviously, architects are all are largely tied into this secret society structure and so on. But what is very interesting, and it's what I think Jake's trying to hint at as well, is this kind of meta conspiratorial stuff, which is just, you know, percolating through. It's exclusively occult. It's go on.
Oh, I was just going to say that I feel it's the reason why you see the footprint of
right.
know, organizations like
yeah.
Rosicrucian and Masonic and, you know, Illuminati themed kind of, it's because they're more consciously involved in the occult and the esoteric. So
yes.
being more like coming from that angle, being involved in these forces that are closer to the source, makes your work in whatever capacity it is, a building or a symbol or a logo for your company, makes it unconsciously, but also consciously. I mean, they're consciously intending it, but there's a greater force that works through them because
absolutely
they're magicians.
Absolutely right, yeah. Absolutely right.
And so then they might not necessarily be aware of all the facets of what they're doing. So that's where I'm just trying to get the impression across that even if you're seeing, you know, an Illuminati type themed event, like perhaps 9/11 was, I say perhaps because I'm not sure, I still feel like there are parts of it that are too gigantic and beautifully orchestrated for it to be a conscious bit by the individuals who perpetrated it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I mean, I can take a recent example here also in a kind of an event or symbolic happening that is connected in an interesting way. I'm talking about the signing of the what they call
Oh my goodness, wasn't that beautiful?
Wasn't it? Yeah, the Lisbon Treaty
I was absolutely aghast. I mean, absolutely beautiful, wasn't it? I mean, here we are in this 16th century monastery on land that was owned by the Knights Templar.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you know, go on, Henry.
I'm just going to give a little bit of background for those who don't know here. This is I can tell you then, Jake. This is the signing of the Lisbon Treaty. This is basically the new/old EU constitution that didn't went through in 2005 because the French and Dutch voted it out basically. But this is the signing now they did here I think 13th December, which is an interesting date, by the way.
Isn't it just?
Yeah, I mean, we up here in Sweden actually celebrate something called Lucia. This is a kind of a festival of light, a little bit like that, you know, pretty interesting. And this takes place in something called Geronimo's Monastery, and this was built by Manuel I of Portugal as a member of the Avis royal dynasty, or the Avis house. And as Ben pointed out here, this is where the Order of Christ, the Portuguese branch, basically, of the Knights Templar, had their hermitage. And this is basically where all the EU leaders are speaking about this. And then later they're posing outside for a photo shoot under Henry the Navigator, basically. So, I mean, and this monastery or moonastery where Mary, the star of the sea and maritime symbolism is rampant all over the building. I mean,
absolutely rampant. Yeah.
This is no accident, right? You know,
absolutely no accident whatsoever. I mean, entirely exclusively conscious. It's so symbolic. And it's in your face. You know, totally what they're trying to do is precisely what their friends back in the 13th century tried to do anyway. 13th and 14th century, because if you look at the Knights Templar, one of the things which they were most interested in actually achieving was a United States of Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So again, all this is taking place, and unbeknownst to many people, they have no clue. It's just a nice place. But again, there is a message here, as you say, because this was something they tried to achieve way, way, way back. And here, I guess this is a very obvious thing for those who know the symbolism or can you at least go on Google and do a few search, you know, put in a few keywords, basically.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that these people are definitely, sending each other coded messages and using, significant dates and stuff like that. They're obviously very aware of that. Yeah. I keep trying to put an emphasis in my work on something that is even beyond and higher than that, because I feel like it tends to suck people into seeing every event around them is orchestrated by the Illuminati. There's this huge paranoid conspiratorial thing happening, and I just don't believe at all that human forces are in the end that powerful, no matter how impressive and how well orchestrated their deeds. There's this, because I look at synchronicities all day in movies and stuff like that, things which couldn't possibly, in my view at least, be put there consciously by a director or by because they only work when viewed non-locally. Some synchronicities, this movie was made before the event, this movie was made by a director who wasn't aware of this movie yet, and then you notice there's this pattern going through it. And I feel like that force is above and beyond any conscious human force. And I try and put an emphasis on that because, I don't know, I just feel like people get very paranoid and there's this fear aspect to it. And I think these human forces are small in comparison to this bigger force.
Is there a clear line? Because I hear what you're saying there, and it seems to be, this is, obviously case by case issue, and you have to look at all things and what actually pops up, but I guess there is no kind of clear line on what is conscious and what is unconscious doing, I guess.
Yeah, because in the end, to me at least, in the end, the ground of all being is consciousness. Pure, consciousness that And out of that arises all forms. And therefore, even if, you know, a human being is conscious of what they're doing, underneath that, it's still the will of the universe. We all surrender to God, in a way, in every moment of our existence. And I feel like that, when you're seeing a diabolical plan by the Illuminati and by the Knights of Malta and by all these people, that is still your will and the will of the universe in some way. You just, it looks like chaos from a small perspective, but from, you know, seen from far enough, it's like there's this beautiful pattern. And I think this evil force at work on the earth, or as it's perceived, is just part of something beautiful and bigger, and will eventually come into balance, and then it won't. But personally, I find it all very.
Ben, I would like to ask you. I mean, you've been looking actually quite at a few murders that actually have been going on recently, or kind of horrible events where actually names and things like this are connected. And I mean, when you're working with this kind of material, Ben, do you see what Jake see here, or do you feel that this is, you know, something very planned or and detailed, you know, even down to the names of the people involved here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I see things very similarly to Jake. Only, you know, sort of my you know, overall perspectives, I suppose, are rather less optimistic. You know, sort of certainly I believe in a transpersonal force, sort of, which is, you know, working through people rather than exclusively focusing on sort of, you know, purely human forensic conspiracies. But I tend to sort of characterize that force as something sort of more akin sort of to David Icke's reptilians. You know, and sort of hence something, you know, deeply negative. You know, something, you know, sort of something sort of truly malevolent and, you know, not all powerful, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, but something which will take some beating.
I see what you mean. And, you know, these, I find some of your latest article there, Ben, very, very interesting and very, you know, detailed in that sense. And it really goes into all of the connections with the names and things like this.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Well, you know, I'm finding it happening, of course, and this is something which you will find, this is something Jake finds, I'm sure, as well. But, you know, it's a journey, isn't it? It's something which you learn more and more about the sort of more you do it. So, of course, now I'm starting to feel more in control of the material and so on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, do you feel that there is a sinister plot behind all of this? I mean, or do you feel that there is kind of a... Well, again, we have returned to that idea that there is an overarching message, or someone is wanting to, you know, communicate something here on a whole other level, you know.
Yes, absolutely. You know, something and someone is communicating, and I'm sure Jake could agree. Only, you know, and possibly Jake may feel that it's rather more positive than I do.
Jake, you know, I would like to ask you. When you were over and visiting Ben and things like this, where did you guys like kind of talk about your work and kind of go over, you know, where your work actually connects and where it doesn't? We talked a little bit about that, but I mean, there is some common ground here, I guess, in your work, and someone who's coming from the outside, I guess, and aren't so familiar with the concept would think that your guys' work is very similar. Where do you think your work connects?
Where do I think it connects? Well, I think we're both very interested in, I would say, popular culture themes. You know, we're into the esoteric, and but we want to compare it to, this is how I see it, to things that are happening in popular culture, in media that people consume. So it's sort of like you're trying to show that, to me, in my mind, this is what I try and do, and this is how I see Ben's work is similar. I try and compare occult, esoteric, metaphysical subject matters to the everyday and the mundane, and ensure that it's not mundane, that there are all these fascinating layers and levels underneath musicians and movies and everything that people consume every day.
Ben, would you agree?
I think so, generally. I mean, you know, sort of points of contact between me and Jake, I think, are really more than the points of divergence, but, you know...
Mm-hmm.
But what what will always happen when you get two strong, two strong creative personalities together is that you will want to, in some subtle way, sort of dominate the other and have a kind of, sort of minor sort of ego tussle.
Did you guys?
But I don't see anything wrong with that necessarily. I think that's quite a sort of healthy and fun thing, so long as it's understood that we're really just playing.
Sure. I mean, did you guys, when you got together, kind of, did you feel like you learned something from each other and could kind of, borrow ideas and borrow concepts from each other and kind of see that, okay, I can go this way and expand on my ideas in this way, or, anybody want to pick up on that?
Certainly. I think I borrowed some money from Jake.
I'm sure it was negligible. I don't even recall.
All right.
It was. I thought it was a wonderful opportunity because when I do my work, I really am isolated from meeting people who are actually even interested really in what I do, because in my personal life, my day to day life, there aren't that many people that I know, or the people who are doing their own work, like Ben, he's sitting in London, I'm sitting in Canada.
I know, isn't that great?
Right, to be able to be in the same room together and to, swap stories about our interpretations of what it's like to be blogging and to have this strange new form of, I think of it as micro fame. It's like, because people can now network all over the planet, it's like you can sort of have people recognize your work, but they're so spread out that you'll almost never see it, like in your personal life. My life is very normal and very straightforward. I hang out with people that I don't discuss synchronicities and 9/11 for the most part in my day-to-day life. It's just something that's developed on the net, and because of this amazing network, it all comes together when you're on your computer. But being in the same room with Ben I was able to, talk and even gossip a little bit about all the other people who are connected to the network of bloggers and stuff like that. So it was a wonderful opportunity. Mm. And of course we have differences in opinion when it comes to nationalism, I'd say. We see things differently, but that's wonderful.
Absolutely. Ben, do you feel the same way there, that this is kind of something that is only happening online, so to speak?
Not exclusively, but, sort of something which sort of Jake did mention there, which I'll just pick up on, but, something which sort of did strike me as really quite a wonderful sort of situation was the fact that, Jake is someone who I do not know really, in much the same way that Henrik, I don't know you, I don't know Frederick, but nonetheless, I'm here, I am in London, in Surrey, Great Britain, sort of talking to you over in Scandinavia, who's talking with Jake in, North America. Mm. And, sort of sharing things which are of, vital importance, sort of to, us, each other, and indeed hundreds, if not thousands, tens of thousands of people as well.
Yeah.
I find that very inspiring, interesting, quite uplifting, but at the same time, it is very strange.
Yes, very strange.
It's something which has not happened, other point in sort of, human evolution, sort of post the flood.
I see what you mean. Well, exactly. I have this idea also that actually when you think about it, this is people from very different backgrounds and very different cultural backgrounds. We can even talk about things of like, what it's considered to be ethics and not and so forth. But all of a sudden we find ourselves in a situation here where all these people are supposed to, gather at this one place called the internet, and we're having kind of a preconceived idea that everyone should get along, and unfortunately we are, this fact, dawns upon us every day. If you go in and just look at some of the comments on a blog or a YouTube clip, I mean, it is a lot of fighting going on. I mean, what is going on here? I mean, this might be a period of where we're trying to break new ground and try to find a common ground, I guess, over the web. Any ideas on this, guys?
Yeah, well, you know, just briefly, if I can interject here, you know, I would say that the synchromistic world or the occult conspiracy world, which is, I guess, my field, which of course bleeds into Jake's work and synchromisticism, you know, I would say I've been, you know, very impressed at how friendly and at how unified, you know, our small scene still is. But of course, as you go further out into conspiracy sort of culture more sort of generally, yes, it's absolutely riven with infighting. And I don't know why that is, apart from that's how human beings are, isn't it? I mean, it's part of the conspiracy. It's sort of part of that conspiracy of DNA.
Yeah.
Jake?
I feel it's, you know, it's belief systems, because, you know, what we're doing in conspiracy research, which I see as only a small part of what I'm interested in, a fascinating part, but only a small part, is we're literally trying to redefine sort of the basic parameters of how society and culture is structured.
Right.
We're saying that it's being, you know, run by forces, or massively influenced, I prefer to say, by forces that are, you know, very hidden. And when you're doing that, you're obviously you're threatening people's fundamental basic belief systems, and people are willing to kill literally for that. So it seems innocuous what we're doing, but we're actually very threatening to certain people. If you are identified with your thoughts and your beliefs to such an extent, you will, you know, you'll kill people for them. I mean, that's what religions and wars are about. And I see it as, you know, in the conspiracy research fields, people are very, you know, identified with how they believe it works. So, you know, people are always fighting about who is the real conspirators and who is the New World Order and all this kind of thing.
Right.
And people are very attached to their belief systems about it.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there will be lots of infighting, because it's very vital to a lot of people's existence, these things.
Exactly. I think you're absolutely right there. It's something, because again, this is something that is, you know, it is real. I mean, for people, even though that you know, it is a theory in some cases, and in some cases it is reality. And where one draws the line is a very personal and you know, individual thing. And so it's bound to be, you know, that people argue over these things, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
But
I do feel like there's the internet and this process of butting heads with everybody and everybody having the opportunity to do it is part of a new dawning of a solution to this problem of all these belief systems clashing together on this one field. And yes, it does look like absolute chaos if you go on YouTube and you look at the comments sections. And the further away the work gets from the core people who are, you know, already, you know, totally on board, you know, the synchromistic circle, and we all send each other comments, but the further out these ideas come, and the more they're accepted and the more they grow, the more opposition it will obviously, you know, reach and instill. It's people are jostling to decide how what they believe about this new form of research. And it's fascinating to see whether it will be greater accepted, because it seems like it is being very fastly integrated into at least on the internet, wider and wider. I see people referencing synchromysticism and these kinds of ideas, this sort of non-local thinking, and I hope it keeps growing. And but it's fascinating, because it's, I don't know, you know, it's like new ground. So it's like a new interactive book, and me and Ben are like part of this new way of putting your work out. Like, at this moment, I'm not an author, I'm not a filmmaker, I'm just a blogger, really. And but it's like an interactive new thing. It doesn't even have a name, what we're doing. I don't believe it does, actually.
Yeah.
So,
Ben, any thoughts on this?
Well, I'm just trying to think. I mean, I, you know, once again, Jake sort of is deeply optimistic, and I possibly, you know, sort of moderately less so. But you know, but you know, sort of certainly, I believe that. That, you know, so one of the things which we do, which, and it's so difficult and yet so simple, but, you know, sort of standing back and sort of not being so deeply invested in our beliefs, in our secrecy, in our egos, in our rank, in our position, here are five or six key solutions. I mean, I've just really outlined there how we can break this global conspiracy down. And yet it begins with the individual. And so consequently, people are scared of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so people want solutions which start with, you know, I'm sort of throwing petrol bombs at the Bilderbergers and so forth, which, you know, so quite frankly, I think that might be rather a good idea. But, you know, but of course, I'm not encouraging that, kids. But more fundamentally, you know, looking to ourselves and stopping being so invested in our rank, in our opinions, and all those things which I've just mentioned, are so much more key and so much more vital. But yet are ultimately more difficult, it seems, for most people. And I don't understand why. I guess I do understand why, but...
do you want to elaborate on that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, okay, I mean, if I can just sort of say this very briefly, but, you know, so one of the things which my friend Ellis Taylor, who's a great friend of mine and a superb researcher, has said about, you know, so many of the people in the synchronistic world and the occult conspiracy world, is that he believes that some of us are, you know, new humans. This is how he describes us and them, because he's certainly part of them. But, sort of new humans is one of these Aquarian phrases, which has been very much, I suppose, co-opted by the New Age movement. And it sounds deeply flaky and very cosmic and, you know, hey, guys, we're all aliens and so forth. I don't necessarily believe that, but, you know, certainly I do think that there is a new consciousness which is manifesting itself through people like Jake, through, you know, sites like Red Eyes, and quite possibly through people like, you know, me as well.
Of course.
And I think that is very inspiring and uplifting.
Indeed. Jake, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I find it such a tricky subject. For me, this really comes to the core of, like, my, you know, the things that I identify with and my own perception of my work and myself and what it means to other people. You know, it's so fraught with ego in this, because this battle with how I view myself and my own importance or unimportance, you know. So it's such a tricky subject for me to talk about. Tell the truth, when you ask me that question, I'm immediately afraid, because I feel like what I is going to really challenge myself when I'm done with this interview about how I, you know, my own perception of myself, because I'm not at this point at fairly at peace with that. I haven't actually come to terms with how I view myself and what my work means and anything like that. So I don't really know what to say.
But I guess you would agree that the loose network, so to speak, of people that are very into this kind of information and the concept that is something brand new, something new is happening, and we're all trying to working it out as we go along, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. No, I mean it's a wonderful, like, experience to be part of
cool.
this. I don't know what to say.
Sure. Okay. Ben?
Oh, yeah, you know, I was just going to add that, you know, sort of certainly I have noticed things building up and I've seen things grow and develop, you know, even over the now almost 2 years of research which I've been doing. In fact, it's slightly longer, but on the net, I've only been active for, you know, sort of coming up for 2 years, and I have seen things grow within myself and within my own understanding. And of course, I see that in Jake's work. I see that in Steve Wilner, who gave a superb interview on your station not too long ago. And, you know, I just, you know, I heard Steve talk, and I have to say, sort of then I thought to myself, my goodness, you know, I actually think that this synchronistic thing is going to have legs. It's going to live because it has young, intelligent, creative people like that excited about it. And I find that to be, you know, very positive, you know, very positive indeed.
Mm. Oh, yeah, definitely. Exactly. So, okay, guys, I mean, do you want to spend a few minutes here and talk a little bit about some of your latest work? I mean, we could, Ben, we could talk a little bit about some of your articles. We mentioned a little bit some of the ideas that you've been expressing. But as I said, you've been kind of looking a little bit about on the on some of the murders that has been going on? Is there just when you kind of pick and choose from all the things that is available out there to write about? Is this something very conscious that you kind of, oh, this is an important event, this is something that I'll go with, or is this something just that when it comes to you, you just pick up on it instantly and run with it? You know.
Yeah, well, you know, I mentioned earlier with sort of, you know, sort of spotting this sort of key architecture. I mean, I can literally sense it now. I mean, I can see a building, I can see a sort of, sort of piece of pageantry, and I can, you know, sort of spot the symbolism and sort of spot the significance of that really quite, you know, almost automatically now. And I'm sure I'm not alone in that. I mean, it's the whole 99 monkey syndrome stuff going on. And I think that there are now hundreds of thousands of people all over the world who do exactly the same thing and who have that sort of talent, if you want to call it that now. And again, this is going to sort of start impacting mainstream perception as well very soon. In fact, it already is.
It already is.
You know, sort of certainly online.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of certainly I think with the sort of journalism, it's the same thing. I mean, I just find now that I have a sense for stuff that's happening. And I can just about almost tell you in advance, you know, so when sort of stories are going to possess this kind of resonance, as Jake would say, and he's absolutely right. I mean, for example, I didn't even, you know, necessarily take a great deal of interest in the story of Madeleine McCann and Meredith Kircher until you know, sort of some days after they had begun. But I almost automatically knew as soon as I heard it that there was something there. I knew that the names were going to start resonating with certain themes which had looked at. I knew that the sort of location would probably hold some secrets, and you know, most importantly, I knew that the actual nuts and bolts events themselves would also certainly would stand a great deal of scrutiny, and that's what's happened. And so, you know, now, I mean, I say this to sort of, you know, anybody that cares to listen quite regularly, but, you know, now I feel that, most of this research comes to me in some ways. You know, I don't really need to, go looking, but then at the same time, I am pretty committed. So it's kind of six of one and a half a dozen of the other, if this is making any sense whatsoever.
Absolutely, and you mentioned a very interesting idea there, or concept, I think, that almost we're able to kind of, as you say, predict then in advance, and some researchers have suggested that kind of the concept of time, actually something that is, maybe not collapsing, but singularity is a word that pops out, and time loop is another word, and I mean...
Yeah.
Jake, I mean, what are your theories and ideas about this? If we think about the idea that time is something that potentially might be less linear in the future years here to come, and the work that is being done now, or the way that we, people are connecting ideas and stuff like this, that this is kind of helping and propelling this idea along. What do you think?
Well, I think I come at this from a spiritual standpoint, or, you know, sort of a Taoist or Buddhist Zen kind of thing. I think it's all very the same sort of. That's at least the impression I want people to have about the words. It's sort of an Eastern way of looking at things, but it's just common sense, really. Buddhist and Zen thought to me is not like a spiritual thing. It's actually just a very rational way of looking at the world. It's just less manipulated by, you know, years of culture and religion. But the now, I feel like, is becoming more vivid, and this is why time is almost basically dissolving. It's because we are becoming conscious as one species, as humanity, and the internet is facilitating this function. It's creating this giant hive mind, and we're all becoming part of it. And the individual nodes, like me and you guys, are sort of aware of this process. And we have different interpretations of it, but it's like this mind is forming all over the planet. And the now, which has always been there, is just we're becoming aware of it. And I don't know, I've been reading, you recently had somebody on who was talking about Eckhart Tolle, and I've been reading and consuming his work with much pleasure, and right. His lectures and audio books and stuff like that. It's just really great, very simple insights, and it's really a simple thing. It's like a person who becomes enlightened, you know, loses his cling to his thoughts in his head. Hmm. And we as a culture are experiencing that en masse. So it's like the individual person's climb towards enlightenment is happening for the entire culture. And this is manifesting in our individual lives as these, you know, greater sense of consciousness and presence and all these weirder things that are happening. Synchronicity is a door that leads you to these perceptions and understandings. And I can't be practical about it because to me it's non-linear. It's spiritual. It's a spiritual matter, and it's beyond that as well. It's not words. Nothing I can say can exactly explain what is happening. You know, you can only point. That's sort of the Buddhist thing at it, and you can just feel it inside of you because your words will only sort of narrow down your understanding of it, but you can feel it because it's beyond thought and it's happening inside and growing inside of all of us and flowering in greater and lesser amounts in the individuals, but it's really sort of starting to reach this crescendo, and one has to wonder about, you know, 2012, and is this because of this galactic alignment, or is everything just in training at this one point, and it's just part of it? But I don't know who it almost doesn't seem to matter why or how. It just is. So.
Interesting. Ben, any ideas about the, you know, the Jake's ideas about the internet and what it is becoming and what it is the world mind is developing? Any ideas on that, Ben?
I have a few ideas, a few sort of things floating around. But, you know, hive minds are something generally, Henrik, which I'm rather suspicious of, as you sort of might imagine. You know, sort of hive minds, I'm afraid, I feel that's the Antichrist. That's what we need to avoid. You know, personally, I believe in, you know, sort of unplugging from the hive mind, from actually, you know, I'm sort of fighting that monstrous wave. Where were we there with Jake? And I've totally lost my train of thought.
You're right. That was kind of my idea also to kind of just. It's interesting that you mentioned the hive mind, and I don't know if that if that is what Jake means, but it's interesting just to hear your different viewpoints, because I think that this is a very good. And legitimate point to make when we're speaking about the web and what it is becoming. I mean, it's more about, it's becoming more and more about plugging into the web in that way. And it is, in my eyes as well, also kind of a global mind in that sense. It is like the neural pathways are being drawn as more and more Ethernet cables are, you know, plugged in around the world. And it's just interesting to hear you guys kind of, you know, theorize around these and what it might mean and where this might be going. And I guess at this point we have this idea that you, Ben, are a little bit more cautious against this idea. Am I right?
I mean, I suppose that might be something to do with being British. You know what I mean? It's that natural conservatism in me coming out. Although, of course, sadly, the sort of conservative aspects of the British culture are now being eradicated. Why? Well, entirely because of this monstrous global mind which is taking us over. Now, I find that thing, I find that the absolute the embodiment of the reptilian agenda, you know, something which I resist. I physically resist it in my body and in my mind and in my spirit. Every single breath, my friend, every breath I resist it. And, you know, I speak out against the hive mind. I speak out against this reptilian agenda, and I tell them that they will never have my soul.
Jake, I mean, do you think it's right to say that it is a hive mind? And if that is the case, is it something that we should fear?
I don't believe there's anything we should fear. Nothing. not a single thing.
Oh, I totally agree. We shouldn't. I totally agree not to fear it. No, I don't fear it. And I guess we are talking about, you know, sort of much the same thing. Only we're coming at it from slightly different perspective.
Sure.
You know, I don't believe that the hive mind is the way to salvation. And I don't mean that in a religious sense, of course. I suppose I think about what, you know, sort of people do in crowds. Okay.
Mm.
It's pretty scary, isn't it?
So what you're saying is that you're resisting that idea of that we're coming towards that hive. So if I turn it over to Jake again and say, do you think, Jake, that this is a hive mind developing, and do you want to resist it if that is the case?
Well, I think it's a perception thing. I think it is a hive mind from one perspective. But from another perspective, you know, exactly what the hive mind means is the dawning of God manifesting in the material plane. And I mean, one can look at it from one angle. Like, it's like the surveillance and the chipping and everything being on the internet. You know, from one perspective, it looks like Big Brother is becoming a reality and that everything is encroaching on our lives and taking away from us. But when you realize that we're all one consciousness, you realize that this force that's doing this is a part of you, and that it does look nefarious from one angle, but from another angle, you start to realize it's yourself that's doing it and that it's part of a bigger plan. And I think that surveillance and chipping and all this stuff makes absolutely 100% sense as we are becoming into each other.
Oh my goodness!
Because I believe that, you know, like Wikipedia is keeping track of every bit of information. We are ourselves, unconsciously realizing that we're going to blow ourselves up with the amount of power that technology is giving the individual. Unconsciously, we're realizing that we need to be sort of monitored, but not by one head, you know, one Illuminati eye at the top of the pyramid, but by our own eye, our own inner eye. And this is a very tricky subject, because when you realize that you are the Illuminati, things get really spooky, and then
I understand that. I mean, I will just go on record here. I'll go on record now. Now, I hope that the law enforcement community hear this, because I will never carry an ID card. I will go to prison before that happens. Now, you have that on record, my friend. You have this on. I will never be chipped, all right?
Sure, absolutely.
Every single piece of information that I want to hold about myself, if you want to put it like that, Jake, okay? I am going to resist until I die, and I will die in prison if it means in some way rolling back this Antichrist.
Absolutely. I mean, that is your choice, and that is your right as an individual to, you know, resist whatever you want to. I guess what is developing here now is a world where we're not supposed to be left with that kind of individuality anymore, but it's more like, okay, now the consensus is that we have to, you know, control everybody for whatever reason. But it seems as all this power, as Jake is saying, when this is coming in here, the people that are in control of the system, or at least think they're in control of the system, become so afraid of that idea, and they realize that even an individual now is a potential, you know, danger to either the structure or the infrastructure or whatever. But I mean, I think you're absolutely right there, Ben, that you are, you know, you refuse this idea of, you know, going along with their agenda because just because they're afraid, right?
Well, I share this much with Jake, and I'm kind of kidding. I'm not aggressive towards Jake, as he knows. I'm just bantering, as we both are. But you know, here is something I do share with him, and it's simply this: I don't care what the world thinks about me. I don't want the world. I'm not a Satanist. I'm not the Illuminati. If they want this matrix that much, I say take it, guys, because I'm going to move on beyond this life. I'm going to be somewhere where these guys are never going to get. They're never going to reach there. And, you know, I don't, quite frankly, I don't tremendously care what the world thinks about me, and I don't really give too much of a damn about the world. I'm not fighting. I mean, I don't even really have a job, to be honest. I don't have a lot of money. I have a criminal record, you know. I mean, only last week I was arrested for drunk driving, unfortunately, so I'm now banned from driving for nearly 3 years. Yes.
That's not good.
And in part, it's not good at all. I don't want another freaking criminal record, to be honest. Right, that's more than enough. But in part, it stems from this notion that I have, I suppose, that ultimately this matrix, this world, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, I I tend to believe it's been I tend to believe it's in the hands of the reptilian agenda, that it's so corrupt, it's so filthy. And I'm following, I'm marching, I'm sort of to an entirely different drum, a much different drum, and I will follow that drummer until I die.
So, I mean, is this what we're standing in front of now then? Is this, you know, do you guys think that this is the kind of the main idea, that either you're going to be in or a part of even, you know, society or the world or the shape of, you know, sheesh, this is the shape of things to come, as the, you know, H.G. Wells' book is called, but that this is the scenario we're confronted by now. Either, you know, you're going to be a part of it, or you have to, you know, totally go out and you know, unplug and live, you know, in a cabin somewhere, you know, out in the woods or whatever. Jake, any ideas?
Well, I think this is the core. This is really the core of the situation. It's how we perceive, you know, the forces around us. And if you see yourself as cut off, an individual, and not part of the environment, then you will believe that the forces, you know, are separate from you. And if the Illuminati is separate from us, then it can be perceived as this nefarious, horrible thing. But if you believe that it is part of you, then you start to realize that it is actually doing exactly what you want, and that the eye on top of the pyramid is your own eye, and that the force that is manipulating the Illuminati is the same force that is animating your very existence. And we can even go beyond the Illuminati and just throw the whole thing away, because it's just such a silly, scary way of talking about, you know, things that could be much simpler understood. But I'm interested in conspiracy theory and all these things, so this is often the case that I have to you know, resort to these metaphors. But I think it's just one metaphor: the pyramid, the sacred building in Egypt, the Benben that, you know, has basically the Noah's Ark from which our society comes. You know, the capstone is being placed, and it might sound like a nefarious thing, but it's so weird how people, you know, they love Aleister Crowley and they hate Aleister Crowley. They love Blavatsky and they hate Blavatsky. It's part of the conspiracy. It's part of the messiahs that are leading us to freedom. Like, this is the core. So obviously people are going to struggle with these words internally and how they perceive, you know, are you for or against the Illuminati and this stuff. I don't even care. It is, I don't see myself as separate from the Illuminati. To tell the truth, if there is Illuminati, then we are part of it. Because we are talking about it all day, we are spreading this information, we are putting the eye symbol all over our work all day,
yes,
and it is working through us. If this is the case, then we are part of the Illuminati in a subtle, very strange way. But I don't think it's a nefarious thing, because I believe that the ground of all being is consciousness and is love and is unity. So it doesn't bother me. None of this, you know, is frightening. I mean, I have fear inside of me that I'm dealing with, but that's my own personal ladder I climb towards, you know, an external resolution of my story. But internally, everything is at peace and everything is cool and there's nothing to worry about. But I, you know, I understand that externally there's this game, it's like a movie, and it gives us a reason to do things. You know, this is why I'm talking, because I'm part of this external game. And it's fun to, you know, pick a side and to be for or against things, and it drives the whole thing. But
yeah,
I mean, yeah, I totally sympathize and I understand, but I don't see myself as separate from these forces. If there are reptilians, I'm one of them. If there are Illuminati, I'm one of them. If there are, then I'm wrapped up
Ben?
In these things.
Ben?
Well, I mean, all I would say, I'm really talking, I'm not just talking to you here, I'm talking to everybody listening now. You've just heard it from the horse's mouth, okay? If there is a global elite, then you're one of them.
Well, the thing is, when you're talking about reptilian, in my mind, you're talking about Kundalini awakened, enlightened human being, somebody who has had the experience of illumination. That's just to me a metaphor. And these secret societies are the people the most involved with these forces. Therefore, they are the people who have had the serpent energy go up their spine. They've had their crown chakra, their stargate opened. These are the reptilians. And these are it's the same thing as unnefarious as a Buddhist monk who is at peace in a Himalayan mountaintop, or it's as sinister as a, you know, skull and bones initiation ritual, which I doubt is powerful magic to begin with. But as if, no, if what really. These people are trying to achieve is illumination, a cosmic illumination, which to me is the only thing that could have any validity in a serpent sort of, you know, dialogue, is that it means that these people are in contact with the Stargate, then that is anybody who has achieved illumination, and that is Illuminati, and that is people like Aleister Crowley, and people, you know, I feel like I've had these experiences, and then I would consider myself part of that agenda, because I feel like there's this force moving through me which animates what I do, and that is part of the Stargate, and that's where it comes from, and it's not, it might seem nefarious, but that's only from one plane of looking at it.